Yeah, your notes are lackluster for this movie. Is that a spoiler? Because we're recording. I have some positive things to say.
Okay, well, maybe just hold your horses.
Okay.
Let us start the episode.
I apologize.
Hello, and welcome to Nerd Critic, a deep dive into big movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is Jordan.
And I am CJ, your resident nerd. Sorry. I apologize. Go back. Take two. Go ahead. I messed up.
I am
just
Jordan.
Say your name.
My name is Jordan.
I am CJ. Jordan here is our studied and credentialed critic.
And CJ is our resident nerd.
There it is.
Jordan would not have judged him if he had just kept on going.
Well, I didn't want to do both parts.
That's fine. I don't mind. I really don't mind.
I'm wearing a parrot shirt today.
Yeah, it's a bird shirt.
Underneath is a Star Trek shirt.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Also, if you're ever to hide a nerd shirt, Star Trek is the one you hide, probably.
It's a cool one, though. I'm going to strip
I'm sure
in front
it
of you.
No, you're probably right.
It's like a wood block print A.
Oh, that is pretty cool.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, yep.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It is tough to get away with a Star Trek shirt.
Yeah, also, like, I don't know. Like, if somebody were to start a conversation with me about Star Trek, I wouldn't get very far.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Have you met people who could get
far? Like Trekkies?
Yeah.
I've met maybe a couple.
I apologize to anybody
who is a Trekkie.
I'm not going to hate on Star Trek. That's not what this is about.
No.
What this is about is I have struggled with Trekkies. I've struggled with
it. It's a level of...
there's a specific kind of nerddom that I have a hard time. I don't know what it is.
And I don't know
There's like a racial difference.
I don't know. I don't know how it's like significantly different from Star Wars fans, but it is.
Oh, it is. It is.
Although there...
I think Star Wars is far more accessible, for one.
Well, I agree. It has a coolness factor that Star Trek doesn't.
Yeah. I don't see anybody carrying a lightsaber in Star Trek, for instance.
It's true. Although, with the reboots, did you see the gun that flips? It like it flips. It goes from like stun to kill.
Oh sure, yeah, no, it's great, but it's not. Like, I mean,
but it's not a lightsaber.
It's not even a lightsaber.
It's a gun.
It's not even.
It's a phaser.
It's not even in the same. It literally is not even in the same universe as a lightsaber.
It's true.
All right. Okay.
Did we just do that because we fear that this episode is not going to have a whole lot?
It's going to be short.
And
we did
say that
a
every
whole
time.
Episode on Will Smith last week. And it was awesome. It was such a cool episode, and I felt so cool. I probably didn't sound cool at all, but I felt cool
because
I was talking about Will Smith.
My dad
I freaking
did
love
call
Will Smith.
And say that it was refreshing that we were back to nerding out.
Oh,
yeah,
that's really nice.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like every time you talk about your dad listening to the show, I'm reminded that my dad listens to the show, and I get real self-conscious, and it probably reduces the quality of the show.
Well,
so maybe keep it to yourself next time.
That's not going to happen because this movie brought out some daddy issues for me.
Oh.
So we're going to talk about it.
All right, let's talk about your daddy issues,
okay.
CJ. We're talking about Gemini Man. We haven't even said the title of the movie
yet. Yeah. Gemini Man,
Above the Line. We've got Ang Lee as the director.
Who is famous for...
High frame rate.
He was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yep.
He was
Life of Pi.
The first terrible Hulk movie.
Oh, you say terrible, but there are some people who strongly disagree with you.
I will fight those people.
Oh, we need to have an episode where you fight all of the Ang Lee Hulk supporters. Okay.
Wait a second.
What?
We didn't talk about the nerd trivia showdown.
Oh, sure. So in the news, in the Nerd Critic news, we had the amazing Nerd Critic Showdown, and it ended, as many of our special episodes do, in a very surprising way.
It did, but it was honestly a little bit of a letdown for my ego.
Well, don't give anything away.
I'm not giving it away. What I'm saying is I did not perform at my peak. I felt like Michael Jordan with the Wizards, okay?
Okay.
Do you know what that means?
Vaguely.
Okay.
I'm not that much of a basketball
He was with
fan.
The Bulls, and then he retired, played
and
baseball, came back,
and
played with the
good.
Wizard. I mean, he was still Michael Jordan, but...
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm still CJ. But I wasn't like Bull's CJ.
You're wizard, you know what I mean? CJ.
I'm wizard CJ.
You're a wizard.
Anyway, I want to tell people to go listen to that if they haven't, because it's a lot of fun.
I agree.
I enjoyed it. I made a fool of myself. You can go online. You can tear me a new one, because I understand that there were some ones that I missed that were very disappointing. It is what it is.
It's out in the world, and that's all there is.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
I did a killer job hosting that
show. You did. You also just laid on the pressure just before every question. Oh, this is an easy one.
I brought a spatula, and I laid it on as thick as I could.
Yes. Yes, you did.
In Gemini Man.
Back to Gemini Man.
We have a cast of Will Smith as Henry Brogan / Junior. We have got Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Danny Zachary. I don't care. We've got Clive Owen as Clay Varys, and we've got Benedict Wong as Baron. It is actually a very small cast.
It is.
There really isn't. There are a couple of other people, but generally, that's pretty much it. Like, it's Will Smith times two, and then, like, three other people, and that's kind of like the whole thing.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a small cast. Yeah. I think, you know. Time to nerd out a little bit. I liked that it was a small cast. I liked that.
I did too. And I actually we're doing a spoiler free.
It's
spoiler free. You don't have to worry about it. I actually liked the characters for the most part.
Yeah.
I'm gonna name drop here. You ready?
I'm so ready.
I met Benedict
I'm
Wong
yawning as well, which seems sort of
like you weren't
sarcastic
ready.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But
like
no,
I'm so
it,
ready.
It was coincidence.
We're talking about yawning.
Sorry.
How many people are yawning right now? Because we're talking about yawning, and if I say yawning enough, they'll for sure yawn.
Well, you do know that we are not recording this live.
Sure, but
right at this moment,
right now.
Do you mean?
In
Wait
the world?
A minute. Do we mean when we say right now? Do we mean right now as a recording, or do we mean right now as you are listening?
I'm going to say
your mind
listening.
Is blown completely.
Your right now and my right now are different. Whoa!
No, no, they're not, CJ.
They are though.
No,
they are.
No.
Yeah.
I
because my right now means right now, and their right now means
oh,
the
you mean
future.
When you said you. You weren't talking
not
about
you
me.
And I.
Oh, I thought you were talking about you and I.
No, no, our right nows are the same.
Okay, I feel better.
Unless you're listening to this in the future. Where's Robert Zemeckis or Christopher Nolan?
You know what?
When you need them.
I
you know?
Think that not very many people are going to listen to this episode, and I think that they'll be better off for it.
Probably.
Okay.
I met Benedict Wong.
Oh, cool.
It was the first celebrity that I had the guts to go up to.
I like him.
He was a. Here's that word. He was delightful. He was delightful.
I wanted you to say he was a deer.
He was a deer.
I loved him.
I really, really liked him. He had just finished filming on Avengers, and he just like sat and talked for a little bit. Like I grabbed him as he was kind of walking by, and he just was really cool and shook my hand and took a picture and was really, really quite charming.
Just a stand-up dude.
Yeah. So every time I see him in a movie, I just am filled with a little bit of light.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I really enjoyed his character. In this movie, along with the other ones, and I think the chemistry between the character between the actors was pretty good. I see your notes on this movie.
We don't need to talk about that.
Did you like? Like, did you have any fun at all?
excuse me, I just got something in my throat.
That felt way too coincidental.
I'm not stalling.
Real.
I didn't have fun
at all.
I didn't have a lot of fun. I didn't have very much fun. I had a little bit of fun.
It was a regrettable 2 hours.
It was a disappointing 2 hours. I went in with fairly low expectations because I had just, you know, you kind of absorb the feeling of a movie before you go. I mean, in terms of like people seemed kind of disenchanted with, you know, and
did you know the Rotten Tomatoes score before you went in?
I think I'd heard it was like 13% or something.
Yeah.
I don't
know. It's at 24 right now.
24, which, you know, I felt like I knew it was probably going to happen. And what was going to happen was going to be that it was not very good. It was very kind of boring. And it was.
And it
was boring.
And it lived down to those expectations.
It lived down to those expectations. And it's just not, it's not fun to go to a movie with low expectations and have them met. It's just not fun.
That's never fun. I went with super low expectations and had a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
There were...
that's the contest here is how low can you get your expectations before going to see it. Yeah.
Well, I didn't hate it.
To be honest.
Yeah.
I expected more from Will Smith.
Okay. That's fine. I mean, I liked him. I thought he was charming. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is great.
Yeah.
And I think that their chemistry was good.
I know
good.
We usually use the word yummy for men, but...
But you're going to say yummy to her?
I'm going to say yummy to her.
Oh, interesting.
I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead is incredibly appealing. I think she's... Mm. I think she is charming and attractive and like a really good actress. And I think there's just, I think she just has a lot to offer on the screen.
I'm absolutely excited to see where her career goes.
Yeah. Well, she's on a tear. She's doing great.
She's been doing great
since like Scott Pilgrim.
I'm excited for Birds of Prey. And I want that to like bookmark just a hard moment for her that then propels her into superstardom. That's what I want.
Yeah.
We'll see. Anyway, I thought that this was a good movie until young Will Smith shows up. Then it became not a good movie, but we'll talk about that.
Okay, that's fair. So in the interest of not spoiling anything, the recommendation of whether or not people should see this movie, I'm going to say don't bother.
I'll say that too. If it shows up on Netflix one day, I'll say bother. Give it a shot. Throw it on. Bother away.
Put it on in the background while you're folding laundry.
It's weird, though.
Or making soup.
It's weird. But not a burger.
Soup takes a long time to make.
It does. It does.
And if you have to be making soup.
It sounds so boring. Goodness. It's better than that. It is. I want to say spoilers moving forward, but the thing is, if you've seen the preview,
you've seen the movie.
There's no surprises.
There's really not a single surprise.
Yeah.
They tried to surprise you. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
So we'd say spoilers from this point forward, but yeah, like CJ
you know everything.
You know
there's
everything
one
about
minor
movie.
Spoiler, but like the second they hint at it, you know immediately. And then they just like let you wonder for a second, but like you're not actually wondering. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, look who it is. And you're
and
like, well, duh.
And then, oh, it doesn't matter at all.
And it doesn't matter at all.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, so I'll say spoilers moving forward, but if you haven't seen it, you go ahead and continue to listen. Can we just jump to the meat of the daddy issues?
Let's hear it.
It'll be the most interesting thing that happens. Yeah, we were going to talk about other parts. We were going to go through our regular blah de blah de blah de blah. And I was then going to bring up something that I realized about myself, because watching this movie, I didn't have a ton of fun. I was like, I somewhat enjoyed it, but then the Uncanny Valley is real.
Yeah.
Man, is it real.
It was a struggle.
And if you don't know what the Uncanny Valley is, you should...
Everybody knows what Uncanny Valley is. Let's move on.
That's not true.
What?
Dude, I didn't know what Uncanny Valley was before I came out here.
All right, here it is. Did you write an explanation?
The phenomenon whereby a computer-generated figure or humanoid robot bearing a near-identical resemblance to a human being arouses a sense of unease or revulsion in the person
viewing it. Do you know why it's called Valley, though? Do you know why it's called the Uncanny
Valley? No idea.
All right, so if you graph it out, you've got on the y-axis, you've got how good we feel about the characters, like the level of unease comfort.
Okay.
So, you know, the higher up on the y-axis, the more comfortable you are with what you're seeing. And on the x-axis, you have fidelity to real life, like how close to real life it looks.
Oh, interesting.
And so as you travel along the graph, it's like you're fine, and then it gets too close to real life, and you get down into the valley of not being fine at all until you come out on the other side and you can't tell the difference anymore.
Wow.
So the problem is...
There's a little sliver.
There's a valley of like it's too close to what it should look like, but it's not right, and your brain knows. You know it's not right, and so it looks super creepy. That's why it's called Uncanny Valley.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, there. I don't know if there is a movie, you know, maybe some of the other computer-generated stuff and like Star Wars and stuff, but this movie probably, like, you just live in that valley. Yeah. You just, you pitch
well,
a tent.
Well, because one of the main characters is that CG the entire time.
Yeah. And, like, it totally takes
you
out of it.
Did you see this in high frame rate?
No.
Because that's the other thing we should talk about. Yeah. Is that apparently, according to Dixon Gaines, who graced us with his presence for our Joker episode.
Yes.
Ang Lee is obsessed with high frame rate.
Yeah. Which this movie I did see when I went to go buy a ticket.
There like, was a high frame rate option. Yeah. And yeah. I refused.
As did I.
Mm-hmm. Because, okay. So, here's a quick lesson on frame rate. Okay?
I'm setting my stuff down. This feels important. His body language just...
Well, I set my notebook down. You're mirroring. High frame rate just means more than 24 frames a second. A film as you are used to watching it in the theater is played at 24 frames a second. Here's the thing. Our eyes perceive images at about 30 to 50-ish. I don't know what it is. It's more. It's like it's at least 30. It's maybe 33 or 35 frames a second is natural eyesight. It's like that's kind of the analog to like what you see at. So when you project something at higher frame rate, like TV is 30 frames a second, it feels more like TV. It feels more sort of hyper real because it's like it feels like it's moving at the same speed as your actual sight, you know. And then if you go even higher, then you get essentially what is lossless. Like you don't see any, you don't see your brain stops interpreting the image as being anything other than like absolute real time. And it's this is stuff that you don't notice consciously. It happens subconsciously. This is why when most people buy TVs and they watch movies on their TVs, they say, I don't know why, I don't like HD. HD doesn't look good. What they really mean is, I don't like high frame rate. But they don't realize that's what they mean. They think it's HD because the brand new $2,000 TV that they just bought has its auto preset at 60 frames a second so that everything, so that they're algorithmically adding frames to the movie that you're watching to get it up to 60 frames a second so that it looks like TV or sports or video game, right? Anyway, so Ang Lee, and he's not the first filmmaker to get stuck on this train, thinks, did this as well, famously. Hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did high frame rate, because then it would be so hyper-realistic, it would be so immersive or whatever. But guess what? We don't like it. Nobody likes it. You go, you watch it, and you think, this doesn't look right. It looks bad. It looks fake. It looks, I don't know.
A lot of people say it looks like a soap opera.
It looks like a soap opera, because it's TV. It just looks like TV. So, Ang Lee, get off it, man. Go make good movies. Like, he's done some spectacular crap and I want to see more from him, but like this high frame rate thing is just not worth the pursuit. Nobody wants to see this.
Yeah.
The reason that 24 frames a second works so well is because I don't understand the neurology behind it well enough to be able to explain it deeply enough to be satisfying, and I apologize. But basically, because it's going at a lower frame rate than you can perceive, you become more invested in the image. You are more aware of what's happening because you're watching it. You're able to comprehend it more deeply because your brain essentially is working faster than the movie is.
So you have time to comprehend.
Yeah, the image is getting it also has a more dreamlike feel to it because it moves at a slightly different speed than what you're used to just watching in real life. So what it does is it sort of like signals to your brain, this is not totally real. And that's good because then you get into the story part of your brain, which is basically kind of like dreaming. And this is, if you go a little bit like to like film theory and like old film theorists, they talked about how your experience of going to a movie is very much, I mean, we talked about this in the Inception episode. It's very much like a dream experience.
Yeah.
So watching a movie should be dreamlike. And you enter a kind of a dreamlike trance when you're totally absorbed in a film. If you bump the frame rate up to 48 for The Hobbit or 60 or whatever the crap it was for this movie, it's not going to work anymore. Yeah. It's going to kick you right out of that dream state trance, and you are not going to have the same experience. Anyway, that's my soapbox about frame rate.
I explained Uncanny Valley, and this is where we ended up. So you're welcome. I'm glad that I talked about it because that was fascinating to me. if not anybody else, it was fascinating to me.
I can say whatever I want because no one's listening to this episode.
I hope they will, because I have something interesting to talk about. You and I had a difference in, let's say, theology when we started this podcast, and you have converted me. But we've talked about it multiple times, and that is I was very invested in telling stories that contained a significant theme or a theme that I agreed with. And you were polite enough never to say that's wrong and stupid. You just kind of ignored
also
it.
Also never thought those words.
And then you would bring up kind of your perspective on it, which is tell a good story and themes will naturally emerge. I experienced that with Gemini Man. So I went and saw the movie, and my thought was, that was fine. My wife and I, as the credits are rolling, we're talking about why it didn't work. We're talking about how uncomfortable young Will Smith made us feel and how it brought us out of it. And I was like, man, that was a little bit disappointing. And then we leave and we have about a 20-minute drive home, and we're just driving home. And then suddenly my mind starts to go down this road that I did not expect. And it was inspired by what was presented to me in this movie. Okay. So, real quick. Okay. This might not apply to anybody else, but, what I'm trying to get across is that stories have this impact on people. So this story had this impact on me individually. I'm guessing there's some other people out there, but this was my experience. And that is, let me tell you about my dad real quick. Okay. My dad, he went on an LDS mission like I did. When he comes home, he moves to Logan, Utah. He gets a job during the day grading diamonds, and then is a DJ on radio at night. And then eventually he moves down to Salt Lake and he becomes more involved in the radio scene, where he did sales and was in the radio industry for a long time. Great. he's over 6 feet tall. Brown hair, blue eyes, very straight nose, and loves the game of basketball. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I went on a mission. I come home. I get a job in sales. What am I selling? Jewelry. I then become fascinated with the entertainment industry, and so I move to the big city, and I'm in the entertainment industry, and what am I drawn to most? Podcasting, aka the 2019 version of radio. And I'm over 6 feet tall and black hair or dark hair and blue eyes, a very straight nose. And I love the game of basketball. Basically. I think that, I could have probably a 5 to 10 minute conversation with a member of my family. And if I told them I was Dan, they would 100% believe me. We sound identical, especially over the phone. What I'm saying is, you could say that I'm a clone of my father, all right?
Maybe you are.
Maybe I am. Who knows? Dad, do you have something to tell me? And so I, for my entire life, and my dad was a successful by pretty much for the most part, he was successful. Family, kids, love him. He had money. He made his own way, all of that, right? And so I grew up. And somebody, some social construct, created or at least implied expectations on me, right? It's like, oh my gosh, you look so much like your dad. Then you grow a little bit older. Oh my gosh, you sound so much like your dad. A little bit older. Oh my gosh, you remind me so much of Dan. Like, you could probably sell anything like he does. And then there's just these expectations that are born out of this dynamic. And so I'm driving home from watching this movie, and suddenly I feel myself significantly emotionally attached to the young Will Smith in this movie. And his whole, the arc of this character is that he thinks he's an orphan and that he was adopted by a guy who taught him to be a weapon and to push out fear or lean into the fear. And he's just kind of this sadistic, military-minded kind of guy. And then he finds out that he is sent to go kill the older version of himself, and he finds out that he's a clone of this guy. And it freaks him out. And now he has to sit there and he has to decide if he's going to kill this guy that looks just that he's the clone of, or if he's going to get to know him, if he's going to kind of lean into that and kind of where his identity lies in the world. And I've had a really, I don't want to say hard time, but I've had somewhat of a hard time kind of not knowing what to do with the expectations that Dan Lindsay, who didn't really do anything, right? He was just a guy, and then I was just like that guy. But I've had a hard time with the expectations that are put on me because of him. And so this story, that's honestly not a great story of a clone not knowing where he fits in the world, and it's just like a sub-narrative of a sub-narrative inside of this movie, just like pierced me to my heart. And then I'm like, oh man, like I've had to like point the gun at those expectations. And do I kill those expectations and try and distance myself completely and ignore it? Or do I embrace it? Do I learn from him and the expectations? Do I become a better person? How do I become my own person if I do live in those expectations? And all of these like kind of significant questions in my life are all of a sudden brought to my attention. And it was quite impactful for me.
Man, I wish I'd seen that movie.
I know, right? It was a movie that my mind kind of created after the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So those are really cool, interesting questions. And I don't feel that this film addressed any of them. I think it put some archetypes in place. Flubbed badly on the execution,
sure,
at every step of the way.
And then
by the end, I don't feel like there was really any coherent thing to like walk away with.
Take away from.
I also don't think you're being generous by saying that the film like made you think about this stuff. It's like that just happens when you watch something. Yeah. It's like
I'm projecting.
Yeah, and yeah. I've done that plenty. You know, I mean, I was thinking about like how much I love the movie Titan A.E. I really, really love that movie. I watched that movie like 3 times in a row one day when I was sick.
I always thought it was the poor man's treasure planet.
It basically is.
Yeah.
And I really loved that movie. And the reason I loved it so much is because it like touched some things in me, mm-hmm, that were like really personal and special. But like the movie itself was just, I mean, I think it was better than Gemini Man, but still, like, it wasn't that good.
Yeah.
It was very, like, you know, copy-paste, you know, like, just, yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, that actually also speaks strongly to the reality that, like, you don't need to think hard about theme to, if you tell a good story, it's going to communicate themes to people. Because we're bringing our own experiences to it.
Yeah.
You know, film going is a very phenomenological experience. I've used that word a lot before. It's one of my pretentious film school words. It just means that everybody has their own individual experience, and you can't predict it. It's the experience of a movie is predicated entirely on the person watching it. It's not determined by anything else. So. Yeah, so I think that's really, really cool. And I really do wish that this movie had been more successful in exploring that stuff through good storytelling, because I think it could have been really powerful.
Yeah.
Other than the Uncanny Valley thing, which I think was probably
I think this movie might have been the technology and everything is close, but not quite there. I think that you know, we're 5-10 years away from being able to do that in a way that doesn't bring us out of it. Because the first couple scenes that the young Will Smith is in, totally taken out of, not only that, but the action in this movie became a video game.
Yeah.
Where it was just, you could see the CGI, it was there.
Yeah.
And you couldn't ignore it. And it just kind of brings you out of it. But there were some moments with that character specifically, when that character was with the older Will Smith version, the person that he was cloned from, when they are together, I did notice that it hit my heart And while I was watching the movie, I noticed that it hit my heart, and I wasn't entirely sure why. And it was very much like the scene, to nerd out for a second, the scene in the kind of graveyard where they're surrounded by the skulls,
catacombs, yeah,
the catacombs, and the two Will Smiths fight, and the music swells. I was so into that. I was loving that. But the conversation right before, where the old Will Smith is holding a gun to the young one and says, like, you're allergic to bees and you hate cilantro, yeah, and the only time that you're happy. Like, I was so, so invested in that. And I've discovered, obviously, everything that I said, that, yeah, I was picturing it. In my mind plugged in my personal experience of father-son.
That scene would have been so cool if it hadn't been about a clone. And here's why. Your DNA does not determine 80%.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. Yeah.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And we ought to know better by now. In fact, your DNA doesn't even account for all the things that DNA accounts for because of, what's it called? Oh man, now now that I'm trying to make this science point, the science leaves me. But basically, there is, epigenetics. So epigenetics is the study of gene expression. So you can have a set of genes that is identical to another person, but if you have totally different experiences in your life, your actual genes will express differently. Mm-hmm. So not only is your personality, is your brain and your psychology and your memories and all the things that actually make a person who they are, not only is that incredibly influenced to the point of being like, it's nature versus nurture, but like nurture sort of wins, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like in your neurology and in your psychology, but also your actual physical genetics expressed differently based on your experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So Will Smith the Elder, Will Smith the Younger, I should say, Henry Brogan the Elder and Junior are nothing alike by this point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because one of them grew up with an actual mother who was maybe abusive, I don't know, and a dad who was not around. Okay, great. And one of them grew up with an entirely different father,
yeah,
and an entirely different set of circumstances, with entirely different like worldviews.
In Georgia versus Philadelphia.
Yeah. These guys are nothing alike by this point. So that whole speech, like, I know you completely, I know everything about you, I know your hopes and your fears and your dreams. Like, no, you don't. You know nothing about him. He is nothing like you.
Yeah.
So that drove me bonkers. If it had been about, if it had been like a time travel thing, oh yeah, totally on board.
Yeah.
Like, oh, absolutely. That's so great. Like, I love the thing of somebody's like, I mean, so the obvious comparison movie here is Looper, right?
Yeah.
Where
Bruce
Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are like play the same character, but just, you know, a generation off time wise, and they're hunting each other. It's amazing. And it's also, you get a lot of that stuff. It's earned beautifully. And you get the stuff where Bruce Willis is like talking down to him and saying, I know exactly who you are because I literally was you.
Yeah.
I have literally been through every single thing you've been through, you know? Like, that's awesome. And I'm totally all about like that kind of, that connection, like, feels really compelling. In this movie, I felt like it was just cheating.
I understand the cheating, and I understand, and while
also,
I
also, no, the word is lazy. Anyway, continue.
While I was watching, I had those same thoughts. I don't have the scientific knowledge that you do, but like the understanding that, I mean, just the fact that I grew up in the 90s and 2000s, and my dad grew up in the 60s and 70s, is already just that fact alone.
Yeah.
He was from Liberty Hill, Texas, and I'm from Utah, right?
Yeah.
Just like there are things I understand that. But the reason that I found it so compelling is because, and I wish they didn't do this, but I'm rewriting the movie in my head.
Good for
and,
you.
And what I was hoping that they were doing and what I decided to see was the human nature parts of people that are universally understood.
Sure.
Right. And they're like, 'cause I've had conversations with my dad that have been, here's a window into my relationship. When my wife like beats herself up and she's like, I suck for all these reasons. My natural state should be, right? It should be Like, I'm loving and you're great and all of that. But if for some reason in my head, I take the stance of you're crazy. You're insane. I'm not even going to listen to you because everything that you're saying is not true, right? They're both coming from a place of love, but like one's obviously better than the other. And so that's a severe relationship.
I thought you were going to say. instead, I'm just thinking maybe, yeah.
Yeah, maybe she's right.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you're terrible.
No, I get really frustrated because it's like, she's just like blowing smoke. And I'm like, nothing that you're saying is right. And so I'm frustrated. And I was talking to my dad about that when I was newly married. And I was like, she's beating herself up. And he says, let me guess. You get frustrated because she's just blowing smoke and she's like basically lying to herself. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. And he said, I discovered that early, that was my natural mindset and I had to change it this way. And that has happened countless times where he has brought up something that I was like, oh my gosh, I thought I was the only one. And suddenly it's this thing that he has dealt with that he can teach me, right? So I was deciding in that scene where Henry Sr. and Jr. Henry Sr. is preaching to Jr. about the way that he is. I decided to hear it that way, where it was this older, wiser character who is aged and learned so much from life, trying to get through to the stubborn young mind. And the stubborn young mind being vulnerable in that way, vulnerable because with no choice of their own, this window into who they actually are would be terrifying. Mm-hmm. And what the reaction would be. And then it ended in a physical conflict of the two best fighters in the world. So it was like the concept, the idea, the human nature exploration was awesome. And it was there. But it was not executed perfectly.
Yeah.
Which is a bother.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't executed
well.
it wasn't executed with any kind of like invention or surprise. Like when we said at the top of the episode, there was nothing to spoil about this movie.
Yeah.
I think the reason it was so formulaic. Well, this kind of movie. It's a little exhausting because, like, trying to get into its flaws would just be like a really tedious exercise. Of like, well, this was wrong with this. This was wrong with this.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I want to say that this is a movie that feels like it borrowed a lot of it. Like, it read a lot of like thriller scripts from like the early 2000s, and then just like
it does,
and then just kind of cut and pasted them together. Yeah. Like, there was just nothing that was interesting in this movie. Every decision, I mean, from the very beginning, and I think the thing that bothers me most is that Will Smith himself is totally wasted in most of this movie.
Yeah.
Where he just doesn't have anything interesting to say. Like, there's like one line that I loved. It's in the preview when he says, "You were obviously not the best." And it's like, oh, that's so good.
That's funny. Will Smith.
Yeah, that's a really great moment.
Yeah.
But like, there's so little of that because his character is written so boringly.
Yeah.
Like, we at the very beginning, he's like, oh, I'm gonna retire because I, you know, I'm why? Oh, because he's not as good as he was because he was off by a few inches. It just feels like he takes this 2 kilometer snipe shot, and like this his like partner gets it on his like phone video because he thinks it's like so cool, and he's like, oh, I was off, I was aiming for his head, and that's evidence that I should quit because I'm not as sharp as I used to be, which is different than what he says later, which is that like my soul is like getting, you know, he's tortured by like how many people I've killed. And I'm like, but it's like, it's so unconvincing that I was almost shocked. I was like, is this a joke? Am I like watching like a setup for like some weirder thing that's coming? Because this is not a story. This is not something like the hitman that regrets his life of being a hitman has literally been told a billion times. Like, yeah. I don't know anything less interesting that you could say, but it's being presented as though it's this like really fresh concept that we've never heard before.
Well, the reason that it was frustrating for me was because the fresh concept that they just hit you over the head with endlessly, and the advertising is doing the same, was, hey, look, young Will Smith.
Yeah.
That's two Will Smiths is better than one is literally the preview I've seen.
And
so it felt like there's been a couple movies this way that it's like they'll take one concept that is very, very obviously the concept that made producers be like, ooh, good that's idea. Awesome. Yeah. That's cool.
Which resurrect Will Smith's career by putting
let's bring the Fresh Prince versus Will Smith of today.
Yeah.
The concept is cool. When you say that to anybody on the street, they're like, ooh,
yeah,
I'm in.
That sounds pretty cool.
But the problem with that is that a concept is not a script, right? A script, a good, well-written script is a script, and this movie felt like it was made off a concept.
Yeah.
Which bothers me because I obviously found some gems in there that if it could have just been highlighted a little bit more and been played with in a creative way, I think it could have been really cool. I mean, the idea of at the end of your life or at the end of your career, thinking about the regrets or thinking about, like, it's all stuff that's been told before, but it's very human. Explore it in a different way. Yeah. Present it to me in a way that is as intriguing as the concept, and I'm in.
You know what else is I think the cherry on top for me was the climactic moment when Henry Brogan the Elder takes the gun away from Junior and then shoots.
That was no question Clay the Harris. Worst part of the movie.
I mean, the whole thing is so contrived, you almost can't breathe. It's like, because villain...
Was that supposed to be funny?
I don't think so. The villain is the villain is explaining his actions so convincingly that it sort of demands a response of some kind.
Yeah.
Where you're like, no, actually, that's a really good point.
Yeah,
that's an incredibly good point.
Yeah, his response is, why not clone? Because no more sons, no more fathers are going to go to war and die. No more coming home with PTSD and killing yourself because you can't fit in anymore. These are going to be genetic clones, and they're going to be the best of the best.
And the soldiers and the clones that you've made don't feel pain or fear or sadness because we've engineered it out of them. Literally, that sounds like a pretty good plan. Like, even if you have, like, so I need, at this point, if you present that moral argument, we need to hear the counter. Also, we needed to hear that earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it could be countered in a physical way. But instead, they're like, oh, that's, you make some good points. I don't agree, but I'm tired by the prospect of arguing with you, so I'm going to kill you instead.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened.
Yeah.
At the end, instead of arguing it, instead of answering the moral proposition, they just killed him.
Yeah.
You just killed him. You just kill the villain. Just kill him.
And then
he's obviously wrong.
I was trying to figure out why when I left this movie, actually, no, why when we go to college and Junior is now in college and it was supposed to be like the cherry on top, I was like, wow, why do I feel just so empty inside? And it was because of that. It was because when my wife and I left the theater, she was like, no, it was supposed to be funny that he killed him. And I was like, then the dramatic music should have stopped. And it didn't. And then it went back to close-ups. I was like, I don't think it was supposed to be funny. I think that there was a question left unanswered. And we're like, what's the question? I was like, I think Clive Owen was right.
I'm pretty sure he was right. So this movie seems to take it for, and this is the reason that I was so sort of like just impatient with this movie all the way through, is that like I'm being told kind of like blatantly or assumptively that cloning is just inherently wrong.
Yeah.
Like it's just inherently wrong. Like,
and
like,
illegal.
Like yeah,
apparently illegal for some reason.
And wrong. Like, just morally bankrupt, obviously. So obvious that it doesn't even, it's not even worth explaining, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so to the point that, like, the big line, the big, like, you know, in the preview line where Will Smith gets to be impassioned as his young self is, you made a person out of another person. And I'm like, so sex?
So, well...
like, so you, I mean, honestly, I don't, like, there's not a compelling moral argument against cloning unless honestly, you have, like, some really kind of strict fundamentalist opinions about religion. You know?
Sure.
Like if you're pretty convinced that you're messing with souls and that you're like disrupting God's plan, then like sure, I guess you mount a religious or spiritual argument against cloning.
Yeah.
But practically,
yeah.
Sociologically, scientifically, there really isn't a strong argument against cloning.
Sure. I mean, the idea that that you're creating people that feel things and feel pain and feel fear.
Sure.
And you're deciding their life for them is one argument. The problem
was, you're talking about parenting.
But the problem
literally what parents do.
But the problem was that they took out the fear and the pain.
Yeah.
So it's like a weapon.
So it's like your thin moral argument against what the villain is doing became non-existent.
So parenting.
as soon as the villain started explaining, like, so basically all the arguments that you could level against cloning, the villain's like, no, it's fine. We got that.
Yeah.
We got that. You're like, blam!
Yeah, shoot.
Die! It's just, it was bizarrely, like, unself-aware or lazy or both, and I just felt... I think the thing that upsets me the most about this movie is that Will Smith is in it. Because I don't want Will Smith to be wasted. It's like, I'm going to see a movie about Will Smith. I freaking love Will Smith. Obviously, we did a whole episode about just him.
Yeah.
We've never done that for any other actor, because no other actor deserves it. So... I want to see Will Smith in a good movie. And honestly, he was better in freaking Aladdin.
Yeah.
That's, I'm like,
because he was more,
I'm starting a war with that statement.
He was more Will Smith in Aladdin.
Yeah. Well, there was more to see.
Anyway. Yeah. I also just, a couple, two last points. One, if your big shtick is going to be de-aging somebody, how about you find somebody that ages?
Yeah.
They had to
like say he was 50 like a billion times.
I know, he's 50, 51.
I'm 50, I'm 51, I'm 50, I'm 50. Well, 50, he's 50, he's 50, you're 50, I'm 51. Yeah. Like, gosh.
And it was weird
because you don't believe it. You're you're 30.
Yeah, because it's like you don't know if it's like a father-daughter or a romantic relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's
that
like...
that bizarre love triangle
weird,
that like wasn't.
Yeah, because
don't
it was
get
like...
It. I don't get it.
I think that they were trying to say like he's too old, but you look at him and you're like, no.
Nah. Yeah.
He has a better chance with her
also,
than I do.
Also, when Junior shows up and's like and calls her ma'am because she's older than him.
Yeah.
It's like, well,
wait
is
a second.
She? But maybe she is. But like, also, isn't she supposed to be too young for? So, is she romantic interest of anybody?
I don't know.
By the end of the movie, I don't know.
I
and you know
no
what?
Idea.
That can be a good thing. In this movie, it's not.
Yeah. In this movie, it comes across creepy.
Yeah.
For some reason,
it comes across. It's neglectful, really.
Yeah.
Like somebody didn't bother to write the rest of the story, whatever it was.
The second thing is that the origin of the comic book character Superboy is that the nemesis takes some DNA from Superman and mixes it with his own and clones him in a lab and makes him a weapon. Just throwing that out there, okay? I noticed some similarities. And I would rather see a Superboy movie than I would this one. And that's my last statement on the matter.
We
always say it's going to be short, and then it ends up being 50 minutes long.
Well, yeah, let's be done. Let's be done. Also, I really love Will Smith. Put him in a better written movie. And if you're going to have like a young, if you need like him to play an older version of himself, get a young black actor to play a young Will Smith. There are plenty of good actors who are not Will Smith.
I agree.
Plenty. Let Will Smith be Will Smith and let somebody else take the role.
Michael B. Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan, sure. Really, there are so many options. And honestly, like, if I have to watch another movie with a freaking CG face that's before its time... I just don't want to see that anymore. I don't want to see that anymore. It was so creepy.
It was really
so
creepy.
So freaking creepy.
And then at the end with the college, it's like they either lost time or money because it just got bad. It got so bad.
The college scene, to communicate nothing other than like this weird sort of pseudo-parenting situation.
Yeah.
Like,
again.
It's, yeah.
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 It was so uncomfortable. It went from bad to worse.
Anyway, we'll leave it there. Do we have any like announcements and anything?
We are going to be covering Zombieland next.
Yay!
And I'm super excited.
Me too.
And then Zombieland Double Tap comes out, which we'll also be covering. And so there are some good things to come. I feel like we should announce that we're going to do some special things for Terminator Dark Fate because... Hell yes, we're going to do some special
this
things.
This is the first I'm hearing of it.
It's important.
It is important.
It's an important to you. Movie.
I understand.
To everybody, CJ. Uh-huh. To everybody.
Totally.
Okay. Thank you, Michael Bonmiller, for the music.
Go ahead. You could do it.
I feel like I've been talking a lot.
But I had a whole speech about my dad That's on true. A movie podcast.
That's true. Don't you feel like that earned you a sign off? Or do you feel like...
No, you're I just, feel like I don't deserve it.
You don't deserve it?
I mean, I had a whole dad monologue on a movie podcast. You know what I mean? This isn't a family podcast. This is a movie podcast. My dad hasn't been in any movies.
This is such a weird argument. I don't even know what side of it I'm on.
Who am I? Ang Lee? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. He didn't write it, did
no,
he?
No.
No. No. It's fine.
He just chose to direct it. Ang Lee... Get someone else to read your scripts before you choose them. Anyway, guy's a super talented director.
Yes. Before we leave this episode. I mean, Life of Pi, are you kidding?
Honestly, he is so freaking talented. Yeah. I hate that he's obsessed with high frame rate because I think it's a giant mistake, and I hope that eventually he'll give it up. But, like, he's a real talented guy.
He's real.
So I would love to see him do another great movie. Anyway, okay. That said, please, everybody, remember to love movies like a nerd and respect them like a critic.
And cut.